This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
They've called together the countries along the Balkan route and brought them here to Vienna to discuss the Balkan route. And what I'm seeing is coming out of the meeting and the third in this press conference, they're planning to keep it closed.
That's Carrie Skyring reporting on a European minister's meeting to continue to block the Balkans' route to migrants trying to enter Europe. We'll have details coming up. Also, Somalia's presidential election is headed to a third round today. And Germany's new director of migration says her agency will accelerate a backlog of 435,000 asylum claims. 6 years after the Arab Spring, Tunisia appears to be the leading hope for democratic change. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Somalia's presidential election is headed to a third round today after no candidate won a majority in the first two rounds of voting by parliament today. The incumbent president, Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud, received the most votes in the first round with 88, but fell well short of the number required for re-election. He was trailed by former Prime Minister Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, who had 72 votes. Former President Sheikh Sharif Sheikh Ahmed received 49 votes, and the president's own Prime Minister Omar Shamarki took 37. Haroon Maruf is a senior editor with the VOA Somali service. Reporter William Eagle asked him more about the policies of the incumbent president and those of his rivals.
The incumbent president has been following what he called it six-pillar policy. Among these policies, stabilizing the country, implementing reconciliation, restoring public service delivery, economic recovery, among other issues. The alternative policies are that two of the countries, for instance, former President Sharif Sheikh Ahmed is saying he is going to focus on security, rebuild the national army, and he is also saying that he will fight corruption. He is also saying he will empower, improve capacity of the national institutions, because we have ministries and government and prime minister, but apart from that, the government is not really properly functioning. So they are offering to rebuild the national institutions, employ more civil servants, create more income-generating resources.
In Somalia, does the president have very much power, or is he largely a figurehead?
This is a very controversial issue. The constitution gives the president the power to appoint a prime minister, but the president cannot dismiss the prime minister. Only the parliament can do that. But the president has the power to appoint the commanders of the army, the police, the national army, the custodial corps, the intelligence service. He also has the power to appoint ambassadors. Apart from that, it's a fairly ceremonial position. But in Somalia, what we have seen recently is that the president has taken over the powers of the government, the powers of the prime minister. And that's why we have seen a lot of political crisis, prime minister and the president bickering, fighting over who has the powers, who has what to say on particular project, particular issues. That's why we have had three prime ministers within the last 4 years. So this is a contentious issue. And unless the constitution further defines the powers and separates the powers, we're going to have similar political crisis.
What does this vote mean for the region?
This vote means for the region. The region wants a very strong, reliable ally in Somalia, a government that is really determined to fight al-Shabaab, not only determined to fight al-Shabaab, but a government that is ready and prepared to take over the security of the country from the African Union troops. African Union troops said they are preparing to leave Somalia by 2020. That's in 4 years' time. And if by that time Somali army is not ready, the country is going to fall back into a very serious situation. So the country needs to have really very strong, determined government and leadership that has national agendas at the heart, that can achieve their goals, that can unite the people, that can have a message they can sell to the public.
That was journalist Haroon Maarouf of the VOA Somali Service. He was speaking with VOA's William Eagle. Meanwhile, in northeastern Somalia, suspected al-Shabaab militants launched an attack on a hotel in the Red Sea port town of Bosaso today. 4 hotel guards and the 2 attackers died during a gun battle. The Interior and Defense Ministers of 13 European nations met today in Vienna to discuss the challenges posed by migration. They are preparing for an expected increase in migrants and refugees in the spring when the weather begins to warm. Austria hosted today's meeting. It helped coordinate efforts last year to close migrant routes through the Balkans. Reporter Carrie Skyring is following the story. From Vienna, he spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua about the meeting and the follow-up press conference.
Well, it's exactly 1 year since the Balkan route was effectively closed, and that was on the initiative of the Austrian government, Austrian ministers. And so 1 year later, they've called together the countries along the Balkan route and brought them here to Vienna to discuss the Balkan route. And what I'm seeing is coming out of the meeting, and I've heard in this press conference, they're planning to keep it closed and to reduce even further the small number of migrants and refugees coming along it at the moment.
Is it a more unified approach? Because I remember last year, individual countries were taking their own actions.
It is a more unified approach, and that's what Austria is trying to organize. I guess Austria being basically at the northern end of the Balkan route, it's in Austria's interest to see these borders closed further south. That means they have to put less resources on their own borders and deal with fewer numbers coming here. So Austria is trying to coordinate, but you see a different approach from different countries. You see Hungary basically closed 100%, but you will find countries like Croatia, Serbia, and Slovenia not so effective, if you like, at closing their borders and taking somewhat of a more liberal approach, and refugees are getting through. So the approach is different, but Austria is trying to have a unified approach, and that's what this meeting was about. They're talking about forward planning in case the pressure along the route increases at some point in the future, perhaps when the weather gets better, and they want to be able to deploy resources from one country to another if the pressure from migrants and refugees coming up that Balkan route increases in the future.
Any idea how much pressure they're expecting, considering that the European Union and Turkey still have that deal in place that at least slows a lot of the refugees coming from Turkey into Greece?
Well, the Austrian defense minister, Mr. Doskozil, has been talking about this. He says we can't guarantee that this agreement with Turkey will hold, that they could open the gates again, as he put it, and we have to be ready for that. So they're planning for a situation where the agreement with Turkey doesn't hold and that there might be another flood of refugees out of Turkey, in which case there would be coming, most of them, to the Balkan route, so across the narrow strait to Greece, to the island of Lesbos, and then further on up through those countries. And Austria is even suggesting, well, we'd like to be able to provide our soldiers to other countries along the Balkan route to help their resources at controlling their borders. So you can see that Austria is quite serious about keeping this route as closed as possible.
Have the Interior and Defense Ministers announced a follow-up meeting?
Yes, and in fact, in April, we should hear from them again, because what they've announced is a Balkan border protection offensive, and they're putting together plans for the future, and that should be announced at some point around about April. They're also looking for another meeting, which is designed to coordinate the return of unsuccessful refugees, so illegal migrants whose application for asylum has been rejected. So they want to coordinate that, and that is also coming out of this meeting, another coordination measure, if you like, as well as closing the borders, also coordinating on returning unsuccessful refugees.
That's reporter Kerry Skyring from Vienna. He spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. Well, Germany's new director of migration and refugees says her agency will accelerate a backlog of 435,000 asylum claims and step up deportations of those rejected. Jutta Kort tells Germany's Handelsblatt newspaper her agency has received more than $40 million in funding. In the past 2 years, more than 1 million migrants have arrived in Germany from the Middle East, Africa, and elsewhere. But a spate of migrant initiated attacks in Europe has made the issue politically sensitive. In December, a 24-year-old Tunisian man who had been rejected for asylum killed a dozen people after ramming a truck into a Berlin Christmas market. Zimbabwe's highest court has dismissed a case filed by an activist who argued President Robert Mugabe violated the Constitution and is therefore unfit for office. In related news, the Zimbabwe Peace Project, a watchdog group, has called on the country's Human Rights Commission and regional bodies to pressure their government to release all political prisoners. It says they should be guaranteed their right to freedom of expression. The Zimbabwe Peace Project is an NGO founded by faith-based and human rights groups. Also, Zimbabwe presidential spokesman George Charamba has reacted to criticism earlier this week by the U.S. Embassy. The embassy urged the government to respect human rights. However, Charamba said Zimbabwe is waiting for a cue from the Trump administration about future relations. In the meantime, he says U.S. critics of Zimbabwe can go and hang on a banana tree. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 17 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Somalia's presidential election goes to a third round with no candidate winning at this point. And the interior and defense ministers of 13 European nations met today in Vienna to discuss the challenges posed by migration. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Six years after the Arab Spring, hope for democratic reforms has often been replaced by conflict and humanitarian crises. Syria has suffered a devastating civil war. Libya has three competing governing bodies. Yemen has been embroiled in war for almost 2 years. And Egypt has been labeled by Freedom House as the worst state in North Africa when it comes to civil rights and political participation. But there is a bright spot. Tunisia was rated as the only free country in North Africa in the Freedom House annual report. Maharazia Labiti is a member of the Tunisian Parliament and former Deputy Speaker of the Tunisian National Constituent Assembly. She spoke with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy about Tunisia being a role model for democratic transition in the Arab world.
We do not pretend to be a model, but we are trying to stick to this dream of building a Tunisia, democratic Tunisia, pluralist Tunisia, Tunisia for all Tunisian, whatever is their belonging, ideologically, religiously, or from their social class anyway. What we have really achieved is being capable of dialogue, even in the most difficult situation. This is the key. This is the key. How to sit together around the table and try to settle issues through dialogue and not by arms. And in giving the importance to the life of all Tunisians, no single Tunisian life can be sacrificed for power. No. Life must be saved, and this is the first, I think, dialogue, respect of life, of human dignity, and accepting the other, diversity.
How differently did the Muslim Democratic Nahda Party deal with the political transition compared with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt?
It is evident that we have dealt differently. Even if we have stemmed from the same, let's say, idea of revivalist movements, since the early 80s we have developed along different lines. In Tunisia, Nahda has take the objective of being democratic, meeting the other, discussing with different political families. And I remember in October 18th in 2005, when all the opposition from Communist Party to Nahda met together to say no to dictatorship, but at the same time to discuss about what Tunisia we want. And to agree on 10 points. Among these 10 points are peaceful alternation to power, respect of human rights, of women rights, and democracy, democracy, democracy. Maybe this experience is lacking elsewhere, like, for example, in Egypt.
Tunisia was the only North African country to be rated as free in Freedom House report. How did Tunisia become a role model for respecting political rights and civil liberties?
Due to the advocacy of civil society and the quite high level of education and the commitment of many Tunisian political parties, even if they disagree on the manner on the vision, they agree on this objective. We have to respect human rights. We have to provide a public space where every Tunisian can express himself, herself, can not be threatened in his life or in his thought or in his conscience. This is why we succeeded something, we achieved something in the Constitution. I was myself surprised when we voted in Article 6, freedom of conscience.
Meherazia Labidi is a member of the Tunisian Parliament. She spoke with VOA's Mohamed El-Shanawi. Officials in northern Cameroon say Boko Haram is hitting back against regional military pressure with suicide attacks. Rarely a week goes by without reports of a bombing. To protect border communities, Cameroon is reinforcing the capabilities of local self-defense groups who help the military. Moki Edwin Kinziga reports for VOA from Mora.
Music is played to welcome 200 recruits of the self-defense group in Mora on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. Among the thousands witnessing the exercise is Far North Region Governor Mijiyawa Bakari.
Sur très haute instruction du chef de l'État, son excellence Paul Biya.
The governor tells the recruits President Paul Biya has instructed him to visit all border localities to congratulate and encourage self-defense groups and traditional rulers that have been courageously defending people from Boko Haram. Regional troops say they have pushed the terrorists from much of the territory they once occupied. But Boko Haram has resorted to a campaign of suicide attacks, often targeting civilians. The governor gave the vigilantes in Mora motorcycles, bicycles, metal detectors, and cash to help with their effort. Dele Paul leads the self-defense group in Mora.
Ils sont même presque déjà finis. Ils sont même presque déjà finis et on est prêt à leur finir encore.
He says they are more than ever before determined to eradicate suicide bombings in their locality. There have been concerns about relying on vigilantes, including about the possibility of human rights violations. Last year, some members of self-defense groups were arrested and dismissed on suspicion Boko Haram had infiltrated their ranks. But officials say the self-defense groups are doing much-needed work that saves lives. This is their home. They know their way around, and they share intelligence with the military. VOA joined members of the Mora Self-Defense Group in the field. Strong winds blew over the village late Tuesday. 80 vigilantes armed with machetes, bow and arrows, knives, metal detectors and spears gathered to take over from those who worked the afternoon. While the military is tasked with protecting the nation's borders, the self-defense group makes sure no stranger enters their village. Group leader Kadir Usmanu says they have been given cell phones to call the military when they see suspects. He says they are sacrificing for the well-being of their village. VOA could not join them on their patrol near the border. The military said it was not safe. Mora village chief Joseph Manauda says thanks to the vigilantes, the population can sleep at night. He says self-defense groups may not have guns, but they have succeeded in stopping so many attacks. He says when the vigilantes stop suspicious people from crossing into Cameroon, they also inform Nigerian traditional rulers across the border. He says the vigilantes also communicate with Nigerian self-defense groups about suspects crossing the border. Several dozen self-defense group members have been killed in northern Cameroon. Salih Ali Muhammad says he narrowly escaped death. The 44-year-old had been assigned to the island of Lake Chad with his two brothers, who are both men. He says two armed Boko Haram fighters forced them at gunpoint to sail through Lake Chad to a village in Cameroon. He says he knew that they would be killed after rendering the service, so he attacked one of the terrorists and they fell into the lake. He says his two brothers attacked the other terrorist while other boat men called the military, which came to their rescue. He walked away with a bullet in his right hand and was treated at a government hospital for free. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the northern Nigeria-based terrorist group Boko Haram. The militant group has targeted both Muslims and Christians, killing more than 20,000 people since 2009. VOA has exclusively obtained secret video shot by Boko Haram that identifies its operatives committing acts of terror. We'll discuss the violent organization on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever.
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.